Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
It's Friday night, and we always look, we love positivity every night. And if the nervousness of coming to America, okay, I get it. But if you want a really good story, and this is one of those really good stories, if you remember, we told you about a month ago, as things started to turn with COVID-wise here in the country, with the vaccine rollout happening and cases decreasing and people were still practicing good behavior, you know, still wearing masks and everything else. And I know now that, you know, it's starting to lose its way a little bit throughout the country. Hopefully, you know, I got fingers crossed that it keeps getting better. But COVID has been getting better, and now the country is really opening up. And I don't want to sit back and say, where was this 6 months ago? Let's just celebrate we're here right now. And we told you that the real official beginning, when we're going to feel like things are back to normal or they're almost back to normal, is going to be the beginning of baseball season, right? Whenever something big happens in this country, sports is always at the forefront of it. This is why sports and politics and sports and pop culture and sports and anything else that goes on, why it's hand in hand, because usually it is sports that leads a discussion or sports leads away in their actions. And everybody looks to sports to saying, hey, all right, tell us everything is okay, or tell us what we need to do now, right? You think all the leaders we have in this country, and they all look around and go, what's the NBA going to do here? What's the NFL going to do here? Hey, what's Major League Baseball going to do here? Let's take a look and see. And we get it that way. And sometimes it's rough. The NBA led the way last year. I remember the closing down of COVID. Once Rudy Gobert tested positive for COVID-19, that was it, right? The NBA shut down. Within a couple of days, everything else shut down. We're coming up on the year anniversary of that happening in a few days. But baseball is going to lead us out of it. And with open-air stadiums and baseball being a sport that clearly is one of those sports that is very conducive to playing in the shadow of COVID-19, we get this news today that California is lifting COVID restrictions on outdoor sports and entertainment venues, clearing the way for fans to attend games on opening day and theme parks like Disneyland to reopen for the first time in more than a year. This is not something I expected to see right now, but here we are right now. You can go to games, and Disneyland's going to reopen. Now, does this mean you're going to get to go to Disneyland? No, but this is more a symbol of, hey, now I get it. Now I get that we're doing better. Now we're making big decisions that are positive, that people are allowed to go to games. Look, MLS is going to start soon. People are going to go to MLS games. But can you imagine what it's going to be like, the excitement for opening day, where California, we have been one of the most conservative states for COVID-19, and we still had the huge, we were the epicenter of it for about a month or so. But California is one of the most conservative states, and here they are with, hey, we're going to allow people to go to games. We're going to reopen theme parks. It's happening. And we still have to be doing a good job, right? We still can't just think, okay, it's done. But now you're seeing that, hey, it's not only light at the end of the tunnel, we're getting to the end of the tunnel. And the beginning of the baseball season, trust me, when we get to that first week of April, coming up in about 2.5 weeks, and so we're going to, you know, with more vaccines that keep coming out, and we're hearing that maybe everybody can get vaccinated by the beginning of the summer, which would be incredible. That's when it's really going to feel like, hey, we're out of this. It's going to be about a year because, you know, from March 13th, I think, was our last day of school, I think, before they shut things down. So in the end, it's going to be about a year. But boy, at the year mark here, we're really going to feel like we are over the other side of the mountain on it. And we are coming downhill and we are gathering speed. And by the time we get later into spring, into the summer, we're going to be back to life kind of like we knew it before, which is going to be something. And trust me, that first week, the visuals of Major League Baseball, what people are going to get to see the celebrations of people in line at the ballpark, even though they're going to be social distance and sitting apart from each other, seeing that and feeling like, okay, here's baseball starting. It's a rite of spring. You know, it's something, hope springs eternal in baseball, and the beginning of the season always signals something new. It's a new year for everybody, right? Everybody goes back to 0-0 and hope starts anew, whether it's for baseball or for an allegory in life. And the beginning of baseball season is going to do that, and especially now you're seeing this in California. We're almost there.
I almost heard James Earl Jones' voice in my head as you started to speak. Purple Tier Outdoor Sports, limited to 100 people. Limits increased to 20% capacity in the red tier, 33% orange tier, 67% in the yellow tier. Obviously, nationwide, you've heard a lot of collegiate entities coming forward saying we're going to have 100% in these seats. The city of Atlanta saying we're going to have 100% by baseball's All-Star game. All of those things, big benchmarks. Here in California, you mentioned the politics. I'd be remiss if I didn't remind folks nationwide that there is a recall effort on the governor. So getting things open helps his case. Just to kind of throw a one-liner out there, obviously a lot of positivity, the vaccines and numbers and everything that you do. But, you know, sometimes you need that little extra jolt to keep pushing things and reevaluating and getting a better understanding, handle, and movement on these type of things. I can tell you right now, I'm going to be off the first, not because I am an April Fool, but I'm going to go try to be one of those people in the ballpark.
Nice.
The Angels White Sox, baby.
Nice. Dude, Angels, White Sox, are you kidding? You're getting in.
To get things started.
Well, the Angels are going to say, it's a normal time for us. These are normal ticket sales. Oh, sorry, too soon.
Hey, you can do that. But those are the meaningful at-bats that Trout and Pujols will have this season. So, I mean, it might have some extra demand as we go. One of the things that is going to be kind of interesting to watch, and the wording has been nebulous at this point, of in-state visitors is a term being used. So the question of, hey, you're going to open up the ballpark, and this is particular to me as I have family all back in Chicago, saying, it'd be nice to go to California. Come see the White Sox and cheer them on. But whether you're going to have to show ID and proof of residence or something, there may still be some data to flow from there. But the larger point is, yes, there's a step forward. There's positivity, and we can do all those hope springs eternal, and even the Mets have a chance right now. And all the
stop. We're going to the NLCS. We're going to play the Dodgers. It's happening. All right, okay. I told you it's going to happen.
It's and Taylor's going to hit another grand slam and send Twitter into a whole other world. But the idea just being that you can put something on a map, right? One of the big important things they talk about psychologically when you're at work, because let's face it, a lot of folks don't have the luxury of their work day being one of the highlights of their day. We get to come in, yell at each other, try to inform, entertain. Like, that doesn't mean there aren't hard days where you got stories that are just like, man, this is difficult, you know, real life stuff to talk about. But we like our jobs. A lot of folks don't. So what do they say to do? Always have something on the calendar, right? Always have an event, always have a vacation, always have some goal. And now when you start moving the lines and you start actually getting some concrete plans of, all right, on this date, you should be able to do it. And maybe you are one of the 20% or whatever that gets to go to Disneyland as they open. I mean, all of those big things, those are big momentous occasions. We've got schools reopening here. I know my next door neighbor breathed a big sigh of relief because two of the older kids went back to school. As of today, so I was like, hey, my house was kind of quiet in the morning. I go, just think all next week you're going to have that quiet. So, you know, there's little milestones, but always, you know, look at the calendar. Try to put something out there for yourself and find that ray of sunshine. Find those wins, people. They're coming.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Hushmanzada and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Joining us now on the hotline, he is the editor-in-chief at fansided.com, longtime NFL insider, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter, and author of the new book, Joe Douglas, A Relentless Life in Pursuit of Zach Wilson. It is Jason Cole. J. Cole, what's happening, man?
Go Aztecs, dude. All right. Life is beautiful. Just exceedingly beautiful.
You are full of positivity on this Friday as well, my friend. Very
I am.
Nice.
Well, it's a Friday night. Why wouldn't you be positive?
Well, yeah.
Sure.
It's an up with people kind of moment.
Yes, you get to talk with us. You're going to make some fun jokes. You're going to have the best 15 minutes of your week now with us.
That's quite entirely possible, although it would be a lot better if Arrington were here.
Wow. Wait. Instead of me or instead of Harmon?
Wow.
He usually works with Harmon. Just saying.
Okay. Listen.
Wow.
Okay. Oh, yeah. You crack yourself up, don't you? Yeah, you're hilarious, aren't you?
You walked right into it, pal.
You know, listen, so you know, every time we have you on, it's because Jay Glazer doesn't pick up his phone. All right? Just so you know.
Yeah,
okay,
let's go. And let's just say this. Based on what I know, Jay's not picking up the phone very often these days. So, yeah. Just saying.
Yeah, he's on his big vacation right now. He told us that the other week. Hey, listen, let's start here,
yeah.
Since I mentioned Zach Wilson. He's getting all kinds of love right now. It's close between him and Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, clearly, look, the Jaguars are going with Lawrence at number one. But is Zach Wilson really that good? I mean, I know he's good. I've seen him play. But is he suddenly that good?
Look, I think this is just a love affair time with quarterbacks. I talked to, about 25 people, and there's a handful of people in that group who say, three or four, who say, Wilson might be better than him, right? He might be the better player. And that's kind of the typical argument you get between prospects. Sometimes people just have different opinions. But I think the consensus is that Lawrence is clearly the better player. The better pedigree. So I just think there are some people in that group who are just contrarians to be contrarian, because just on the off chance that Wilson becomes the better player, they can say that they were right. But when I see Trevor Lawrence, and I'm not a scout, I haven't seen Zach Wilson play very much. So I saw Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields is like, kind of your more mobile version of your typical Buckeyes quarterback or typical quarterback that you get in an Urban Meyer type offense. And I know Urban's not coaching there now, but it's still his offense, right? So I think Trevor Lawrence looks like the second coming of Joe Namath. He just has that look about him. And when you see like old film of Namath playing at Alabama, you just look at it and go, man, they're just spitting images of each other. Absolutely, 100%. So I love Trevor Lawrence. And Zach Wilson, I think, is good, but not in that range overall.
Now, if only we could get one of them to walk around in a fur coat, we are the winners of it all.
Oh, can you imagine Trevor Lawrence in the fur coat with that hair?
Yeah.
Like,
no,
it'd
perfect.
Be almost – it'd be a cross between Namath and Charo.
I was going to give him a little Ric Flair, but sure, Charo
did
too.
Did you go Charo, really?
Charo?
Well, that's what we get. We do the deep pulls here on a Friday night. Jason Cole with us.
It's the Dean Martin celebrity roast. It's coming. My childhood is coming back. We're going to soon have all sorts of really ridiculous off-color jokes by Don Rickles that when you look at the repeats, you go, man, that's some racist crap. It really is.
And you probably own all the DVDs, and that's what brought it up right there. Late-night television right there.
The library is full, baby. It is absolutely full as Rickles and Richard Pryor go at it.
All right. Will Seattle Seahawks fans be invoking a lot of angry terminology? Not necessarily that which you described there. But with Russell Wilson and the Seahawks on the outs, will he return to Seattle, or will the Bears actually make a big play?
Well, I mean, I think the Bears are going to make a big play, and they're going to offer up everything they can. But I don't think they have a good enough pick. That's number one. Number two, isn't somebody at some point in time going to walk into Pete Carroll's office and go, "Dude, what are you doing? Like, this is the best quarterback we've had in 45 years, and the next best is Hasselbeck. And after we get past Hasselbeck, it's Jim Zorn, right?" So just keep him. Make him happy. Do whatever you have to do. Like, this is stupid. Like, the Deshaun Watson thing, I understand, because Houston doesn't want to get rid of him, but they, you know, they kind of bumbled their way through with this whole Jack Easterby crap. Mm-hmm. But this is, and Easterby's not a football guy, but he's a not a football guy pretending to be a football guy, and that creates a bigger problem. Pete Carroll's actually a football guy. He has gone out and gotten quarterbacks over the course of his career. He knows how hard it is to find these guys. And he's sitting here saying, now it's time to part ways with Russell Wilson. You just went 12-4. If your defense had been halfway decent all season, you might have been playing for a Super Bowl, but your defense, you never got it together. Russell Wilson is not the problem. Russell Wilson is the solution in Seattle. And I just, like, where's John Schneider to just walk in and go, "Yo, dude, like, no, just don't do this. Don't do this." I mean, even, you know, Paul Allen's sister, whatever her name is, like, even she should have the sense to walk in and say, "I don't really understand what you're attempting to do here, Pete, because, like, it seems like he's good."
You know who else is good that you ignored was Dave Craig. Again, I mean, why? You know, when you talk about best Seahawks quarterback, you completely leave
The best part about that is that you actually looked that up online, and you went and go, "Oh, what's the history of Seahawks quarterbacks?" Because you actually cared that
much. Dude, come on, we had Dave Craig on the show a couple of years ago.
Awesome.
I don't know what to say now. No, we had Dave Craig on the show.
That's awesome. I'm so impressed.
Wait till next week when you come on and we do one of those TV ambush shows where you come on and you're talking and then Dave Craig's going to be on the line listening and he just jumps right in and it's ambush time and then you guys are going to go at it.
I was better than Zorn. I'm number three on that list. Yes. You had small hands, Dave Craig. Chuck Knox used to complain about you all the time. That's legit. He would go in and he would tell John Clayton, "Craig's going to fumble the ball because he's got those tiny little hands." God, you know, like that. That's literally true.
I feel like I need to have a golf joke there.
Wow.
But we'll move on. Hey, Pittsburgh came to terms with Ben Roethlisberger. Can he still work, or are they just nostalgic?
No, I think I thought that toward the end of the season, they started attacking more. I didn't understand their whole offensive philosophy for the first, 12 games of the season. Now, it was working. You know, they were, 11-0 at one point in time. So it was hard to complain about. But when the roof caved in, there were some issues. Now, they got to fix some things on the offensive line. And they just got to decide, you know, James Conner is okay, but he's not great. So they got to get a real running game. But I think Roethlisberger is good enough to make them a Super Bowl, a team that can compete for a Super Bowl. Are his best days behind him? Sure, but I mean, I thought he had a pretty good year last year coming back from that injury, right? Sure. I mean, it's like that's not an easy thing to get back from. And I thought he was pretty good overall. You know, did he have some yips in the pocket once in a while? Sure, but that protection was awful. So, like, they've got some tweaking they got to do. And my thing is, don't change out the quarterback when your defense is pretty loaded. You know, like, they're really good. So if you're that loaded and you're for bear on defense, don't toy with a quarterback right now, even if he's not quite what he was 3 years ago.
There's a subtle dig at Dave Craig right there at the end. He is Jason Cole. You can follow
well,
on Twitter.
Because Roethlisberger has normal size hands. He doesn't have little kitty paws, you know, or whatever it was that Dave Craig had.
He's on Twitter at JasonCole62, editor-in-chief at fansided.com. NFL, pro for, football.
I'm going to be blindsided next week by Dave Craig. Like, most of your listeners don't even know who Dave Craig is. That's the genius. Except that you'll replay the interview from 2 years ago or whatever it was.
I think more people know who Dave Craig is than know who you are.
Whoa.
That's true.
There you go.
They should. They should.
Just making a prize fight.
Somebody was like, LaVar, you started with LaVar, and now you're mocking our interview. Okay, here we come. I'm not letting that go, okay? You know, I'll remember the LaVar Arrington move, okay? All right, way to go, Smith. It took you the entire interview, but you got your revenge. Wrong stuff. Wrong.
You're the best, Cole.
See you, buddy.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Pete Carroll does not want to get fired as head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, right? Does not want to get fired. This is why he has to trade Russell Wilson. Because let's just say he doesn't, right? Right now, Pete Carroll has the power. Pete Carroll has all the power in the organization because Russell Wilson is on the trading block, right? Just the fact that that's the case right now, and we know the teams he wants to go to, and the Seahawks are doing things to minimize Russell Wilson's importance to the team, you know that Pete Carroll has the power. So he wants to keep that power, right? He wants to keep it. If they don't trade Russell Wilson and this season goes horribly, right? This run-first offense doesn't go well. Chris Carson can't stay healthy. And either Russell Wilson bails him out by throwing 40 touchdowns or they just sputter their way to a 6-10 record. What happens after this season? That power flips, right? It switches. Suddenly Russell Wilson's the guy going, I told you. And Schneider has to sit back and the Seahawks have to sit back and go, maybe we need to choose Russell Wilson over Pete Carroll. And suddenly, guess what? Pete Carroll loses all that power because he has a bad season. And when it comes to the dust settling, what are we going to do? Russell Wilson has the power. He's the guy saying, well, you know, we need a new head coach. We need something. It's not working anymore. And Pete Carroll is fired. Now, does Pete Carroll get a job someplace else? Probably, because Pete Carroll's a great coach. But does he want to leave? No. He wants to be the guy. If he doesn't trade Russell Wilson and they have a bad season, he's gone. He knows it. He knows he's gone. Russell Wilson wins and he's diminished. But if he trades Russell Wilson before, he's got the power and still it looks like it's Russell Wilson's fault, right? Because Russell Wilson's the guy that has come out saying, you'll have to ask them. I might want to be traded. Here's the teams I want to go to. Right now, there's a bit of back and forth of, yeah, well, why can't they work this out? But Pete Carroll's not getting any of the blame. This storyline has been, why is Russell Wilson unhappy? Why does Russell Wilson want out? If he trades Russell Wilson, it's not controversial because it's, well, we kind of had to do it. He didn't want to be here anymore. We got what we got. We're going to reinvent this team with a new quarterback, right? What else do you expect us to do? He wants out. So you can do it now and still not be the total bad guy. Yeah, you'd get questioned a bit of, you know what, was Pete Carroll really know what he's doing? I can't believe he pushed Russell Wilson out. But generally, the overarching storyline is going to be Wilson was unhappy. He didn't like the way the team was being run. He wanted out. He was an upset player. He got his trade. Now the Seahawks, they couldn't make it work, and boy, that was too bad for them. But now Russell's got his new start, and now we figure out where things go here. And Pete Carroll is still the head coach of the Seahawks, and they try to reinvent with a new quarterback and redo the team how they want to. They're not spending all that money and giving it to Russell Wilson. They can spread it around. They can make the team deep and good again. You can bring back more guys, Legion of Boom, and suddenly you can be back to where you are. And you draft a new quarterback, and you try to hit it big again. That's the future for Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks. It doesn't happen that way. If they keep Wilson, they have a bad year. It's too big of a gamble to say, let's go and see how 2021 works. Because if it doesn't, Pete Carroll's out. So this is why he's got to trade him now while he still has the power in the organization. Because as time goes on and they stink, he's not going to have it. And we're not talking about that part of it. But when you think about self-preservation, that's what pushes everything over the top, that Russell Wilson's going to be on a new team sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
You know what, though? If he does stay and they have a bad season, how many people will still turn it on Russell Wilson saying, well, he pouted all offseason? He created a problem in the locker room, that it's not Pete Carroll's fault. We know how these narratives go, right? You saw how angry people got with Russell after the couple of comments. He didn't really say anything too inflammatory, just, hey, I wanted a seat at the table. The big part of it was that we'd never heard Russell Wilson talk like that. And that's why it became such a big, right? I mean, it was always, hey, go Hawks. You know, we lose as a team. All of the usual platitudes that you would get from a quarterback. And then suddenly he broke character. Or just decided to voice what he may have been saying behind the scenes, whichever you want to prefer. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying human nature is, someone starts acting differently, what do? You get suspicious. And if you're a fan base and that's been your guy, like, why doesn't he love us anymore? He's talking against the team. He doesn't want to be part of the team anymore. And all of a sudden you're angry at him. And if he stays for a year and it goes south, he'll get more blame than Pete Carroll will.
And so I don't know about that.
Then you can get your parting of the ways, and Pete Carroll still reigns supreme.
Yeah, but if they were just going into this season and it was going to be the same team, I would say, okay, you could be right about that. But they're changing the philosophy of the team. They are taking the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands. And that's the big thing that's going to get them all the blame, is that they want to run the football more. They want to be more of a power-type offense. And if that doesn't work, that's not going to be Russell Wilson's fault. What are people going to say? It's Russell Wilson's fault he didn't throw 4 touchdowns. He threw 24 times on Sunday. How many touchdowns are you going to throw when he throws the ball 24 times?
He's got to be more efficient, Smith. He had the running game he needed. He's got to be more efficient with those 24 throws.
He's got to go 24 for 24 for 4 touchdowns.
Damn, right.
Because they decided to make that change, that's what's going to be the killer thing. Because then you're, well, that's the blame on the offense. They shifted the offense and they changed things, and now it's not going right. And that's going to, Pete Carroll's going to lose all the power and all the momentum very, very quickly. And it's not that Russell Wilson's going to sit back and revel in it, but you see how he can do things now. You see how very publicly he can say some things and turn things. You think he's not going to try to turn that around behind the scenes? Of course he is. Of course he is. And we could be at this point next year, and you get the day after the regular season, and it's okay. It's him or me. I'm gone after this. It's him or me, I'm gone. Okay, Russell, all right, we're all good. We'll get you a new contract, we'll get a new coach, and Pete Carroll's out, and that's how it's going to end.
More power. It's a beautiful theater to roll up, especially now that the Rams have shuffled up their quarterback position and look ready to try to make a run, you know, to a Super Bowl at SoFi. And the 49ers will make a move at their quarterback position. Jimmy G's not going to be their guy. And then Arizona added J.J. Watt. This is fun theater. Good luck, Pete Carroll. Good luck navigating this one.
Twitter and How About a Fresca. Mike at Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. I mean, I am conditioned now that any day for the next 3 weeks, I can wake up and see a big trade in the National Football League. And it's probably going to be Russell Wilson. Like, I can wake up any day and think, all right, the most likely guy to get traded first is Wilson, then the next guy will be Darnold, and then, but I think we need a little bit more before it's one of those wake up in the morning and find out Deshaun Watson's traded. Like, for instance, we're going to need stories that, hey, the Texans are actually on the phone calling teams back now. But really, any day I can wake up and say, is today the day? Is today Russell Wilson traded today? Is he get traded? Where is it? It's Wilson and it's Darnold are those two guys that any day I can wake up and say, boom, this is going to happen and here's where it goes. And it will happen fast. All right, it's going to be behind the scenes. We figured out a trade. It's going on, and we're done, and we're doing it. We made this trade, and we're moving on. I mean, any day now, from now to the beginning of free agency, and probably a little bit after, we can wake up and see that story.
I have no doubt, and somewhere along the way, the Jets and Bears will be involved in one of those stories, which means all night long it'll be Bear Down, Chicago Bears, or video of Fireman Ed.
Hey man, look, I wish the Jets could get Russell Wilson, but that's just not happening, man. I mean, just think that those draft picks they traded away for they traded for Jamal Adams are just going to send back. I mean, it's not there'll be more than enough suitors. There'll be more. I already know I'm going to wake up. It's not going to be the Jets, right? They're not going to have that embarrassing headline of, well, those two picks we gave you, just give them back to us and one more, and you can have Russell Wilson. No, it's too embarrassing. I already know it's not going to be the Jets. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with that. I know it's not going to be the Jets because Zach Wilson's going to be a future Hall of Famer, so I'm all right with that.
Oh,
but it's not
okay.
Going to be the Jets. It's not going to be the Jets.
You just made a small jump there. I like that.
I did. It's a tiny jump, but it's still a jump nonetheless.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We lost a big legend today. You probably saw this story. Mark Pavlich, one of the best players, the Miracle on Ice team, Team USA, that won the gold medal in 1980, the Winter Olympics, died at the age of 63 earlier today. He was found dead at a treatment facility in Minnesota. Now, Pavlich has not had a great life. He is someone who really didn't like the spotlight, lived alone by himself after his hockey career was over, and had a lot of mental issues that manifest themselves in an assault from a couple of years ago with a guy he was ice fishing with. Potentially a lot of his family say, well, he had a lot of concussions and we think he might have had CTE, and this contributed to his erratic behavior. He didn't come to a lot of the reunions for the Miracle on Ice team. In fact, when he came a few years ago, it was the story. Hey, Pavlich is here. Oh my God. Because they knew the guy was having a lot of trouble. He didn't see anybody. And details are not known. He was living at a treatment facility now because it was difficult for him to live on his own. And he was found dead earlier today at the age of 63. And, you know, Pavlich was a guy who he was one of the Coneheads on the Miracle team. And he assisted on Mike Arruzzioni's goal, had the main assist on Arruzzioni's goal. And he had a really good career in the years after the Olympics. Like, he wasn't on an NHL team after the Olympics. And he joined the Rangers, and he was a point-a-game guy for like 5 years. I mean, he had an outstanding 5 years, five-plus years with the Rangers after the Miracle on Ice happened for him. And, you know, then he ran into difficulty, later on in life. But he was a really good player, man. He was tough. He was undersized. He was a terrific player. And, you know, growing up in New York, I rooted for the Islanders growing up. And, you know, it was Islanders versus Rangers. And the main thing is that I hated all the Rangers players, right? Obviously, if you're an Islander fan, I hated all the Rangers players. Couldn't stand them, right? The Islanders were excellence, and the Rangers were, we're the real stars. We're this. It's kind of like Yankees and the Red Sox, right? Like, the Yankees are the excellence, the Red Sox are the everyman team, right? And it was easy to hate all the Rangers, like all the guys, can't stand this guy. Mark Pavlich was really hard to dislike, you know, as an Islander fan. He was really hard because he was so good, and he always made the big plays, and he was someone that you could see, boy, this is a small guy, and he still plays big on the ice. He was a terrific, terrific player, and it's a sad story today, a sad ending to his life now at such a young age.
Always tied to Herb Brooks. That's where he had his most success, obviously, Olympic team, and then with the Rangers. As soon as Brooks wasn't there, he started fighting with everybody, and that became a problem. 5'8", so he had a little bit of, the attitude that I bring to the table each and every night here on Fox Sports Radio. You're all taller than me. It doesn't matter. I'd still knock you out. Personal life tragedy. I mean, you can go through the laundry list of stuff and the sad part of the later years of, you know, concussions perhaps leading to more brain trauma and then, you know, health, mental health issues and the assault that you referenced. He also auctioned his medal off. As soon as you have to auction off the Olympic medal. But perhaps, I mean, again, you know, sometimes it's just financial. Sometimes it's a, I need to let go of this. I've had it long enough. Like, there's many ways those kind of things come to market. And nowadays, you know, the market being white hot, like we talked about that Tom Brady card yesterday, I wouldn't be surprised if a couple of guys were looking around at each other going, yeah, I can get generational wealth off my medal right now. But for him, as you mentioned, you know, there's just the part of the privacy and getting away from it that also was part of what he wanted to do later in his life. So hopefully they find some of the answers, the family that they need to find some peace. Hopefully, you know, unfortunately, he didn't find that peace while alive. Reminder, always give out a call, you know, look in on your people. We've been telling you all during the pandemic, we're not out of it. And even once we're out of it, still check in on your people, damn it. But yeah, the changes in his makeup and how he treated people, et cetera, is noted in pretty much every article you read about it. Watch a bunch of highlights, undersized, but still throwing his body around. A reminder to all of you as well, size of your heart can't be measured. Just like they said in Miracle.
You know, and let's you know, finish this conversation on a high note with Mark Pavlich and talk about the assist on the goal, because everybody remembers the goal, and it's a Ruzioni. He gets the puck. He's just inside the blue line, and he skates in, and he uses a defender as a screen, and he puts the puck by Mishkin for the goal that wins, that beats the Russians, right? Most famous goal in hockey history. And Pavlich makes this play happen. The United States dumps the puck in, but Russia gets to it and tries to get it out. And Pavlich, just his sheer desire getting to a puck right before the forward comes back to grab the puck away, and then there's no play. Like, he gets all the way to the boards just a split second before the forward gets it, and he gives up his body right into the boards that he can just deflect the puck back where it gets to Ruzioni, and Ruzioni puts the puck in the net. I mean, that's one of those hustle, heart, timing plays where I got to get this puck, I got to keep it in, and that's, I'm going to give up my body here and go flying into the boards, and he makes that play happen. It's just a quick play where he gets it, and he deflects it off his stick and kind of shoves it out, and Ruzioni gets it and scores. But that is some kind of play. And we, you know, we don't talk about the setup of the play a lot, because it, that play is just, you know, Ruzioni goal is so iconic, and the shot of him and then Mishkin falling backwards after the puck is behind him. I mean, we have these images that are so great, but watch that play again, and watch, just, he comes out of nowhere and he gets right in front of the forward, and he's able to grab the puck and flies into the boards. You can see him turn around, like maybe he's dazed a little bit, like, did I get it? And Ruzioni gets it and scores. It is some kind of play by Pavlich to make that happen. Without that, I mean, who knows what happens? I mean, clearly there's all kinds of jigsaw puzzle things that go into big plays, but Pavlich making that play got the puck to Ruzioni, and Ruzioni puts it in, and the best sports story of my lifetime is born.
Look at you. Yeah. You're like a little Jason Smith all over again.
Oh man, I'll tell you, that goal is just something. Only goal Ruzioni had in the entire tournament. And, you know, it was there, and it was just some kind of play, man. I've been watching it again for the past 5 minutes going, this is Pavlich, just gets right there, goes flying into the boards, and there's a puck, and there's a Ruzioni, and he puts it in.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Well, we knew this was going to be a different kind of NCAA tournament, and clearly already in the early conference tournaments, that's happening. Now, this weekend is the smaller conferences having their tournament. And next week we get the power conferences having their tournaments. But already we've had a team clinch a berth in the NCAA tournament without playing in their championship game. Riddle me this, Cape Crusader. How is that possible? Team has advanced to the championship game, yet they've already clinched a place in the NCAA tournament. This is the story of Liberty. Liberty, 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 Liberty. Liberty is set to face North Alabama in the Atlantic Sun Tournament Championship game on Sunday. But it's already in the NCAA tournament because North Alabama is a school that's transitioning to Division I athletics and is ineligible for the NCAA tournament. So even though, look, they can still play, but they've made it to the championship game, they're ineligible because they're still transitioning to Division I athletics. So Liberty, even though they haven't played North Alabama in the championship game yet, they have clinched a spot in the NCAA tournament.
How dumb a rule is that? You're still transitioning. We're playing over here, for crying out loud. Doesn't matter. Your paperwork and your approval process is in limbo. You have a 4-year probationary period. Are you kidding me? It's asinine. It's not, hey, they're under suspension for something a coach did, an athletic director did. You got boosters that were handing out orange whips all around campus. I mean, you got none of that. Satchels of cash, under the guise of Hot Wheel cars. Whatever the case, maybe you got none of that. You got, hey, you haven't finished your 4 years of transition yet.
No, sorry, can't make it.
That's terrible.
Can't make it. And this is a team, North Alabama, like, finished the season on a 1-7 run. Like, they were playing terrible the end of the season, and now here, but they got a couple of wins, and they're in the A-Sun Tournament Championship, but they can't make it because they're still transitioning. So Liberty's already made it without having to play in a championship game. They've already made it.
And Alabama.
And another one tonight. How hard is that, man? I mean, just think about this too. Drake, who's a big bubble team, made it into the Missouri Valley quarterfinals, or I mean the semifinals, because their game against Northern Iowa was canceled. So they had a walkover game because Northern Iowa had a positive COVID-19 test, and so they couldn't play, so it's a walkover. So now they're into the semifinals without having to play this big game. A bubble team is now moving on into the semis in Drake because the other team had a positive COVID-19 test. Now, here they're a bubble team, and they're in the conference semis already. How is that going to be looked at by the committee, right? Is it going to be, well, they made it, well, they didn't have to play a game? How they play? I mean, I don't envy the committee. There's going to be so many questions. There's going to be so many upset coaches who don't make it into the tournament this year because so many teams are going to have very similar resumes because everybody's going to play around 20 games. You don't have the 10 more games that teams separate themselves. It's going to be a lot of controversy. It's going to be a lot of upset teams. It's going to be a lot of craziness. And the selection committee is going to bear the brunt of this. Of every year, the selection committee gets criticized because here's the teams we left out, and the committee always has a different reason. Like one year it's, well, you didn't do well enough in your tier one games. The next year it's, well, you didn't win enough games away from home. The next time it's, oh, the teams with the RPI. Every year they change the reasoning to fit their qualification, and it's maddening. This year it's not going to matter because you're going to have 10 or 12 teams. Instead of the two or three, you're going to have 10 or 12 teams that are going to say, what about us? I mean, suddenly the ACC is a bad league this year. Right? Like the ACC. Wait, why is the ACC so bad? Why is the Big 12 going to get everybody in when they all have the same records as everybody? Is the Big 12 really that good? I mean, you could have 5 or 6 teams just in the ACC going, hey, what happened to us? How come you're not letting us in the NCAA tournament?
Isn't it really great? They can all go play in the NIT together. 5 of the 16 teams. Here we go. They were all pissed. Now they're here.
We're going to have our own NIT. It's the ACC NIT. We're just going to play amongst ourselves.
But you've had multiple issues because of COVID this week. We talk about the Northern Iowa circumstance. You also had Holy Cross had to bow out because of COVID in the Patriot League, so Loyola Maryland advanced. Jacksonville, Charleston Southern forced to miss their conference tournament. So still pops on the radar, not to the critical mass and to where the sky is falling as people wrote all the columns and tried to negate any sporting events and saying that they shouldn't be had at all. Certainly not to that level, but just reminders that there's still some issues out there and some circumstances that need to be attended to, but the show goes on. Jim Boeheim will have more reporters to belittle before this basketball season finishes.
Well, hey, he apologized for it. He apologized for that. I mean, he said he was sorry.
So?
He said he was
sorry. How many times do you get to pop off like an ass and just say, oh, sorry.
That's kind of what he does,
I did
though.
It again.
That's kind of what he does.
Yeah, that was good 40 years ago because the only guy that had it were the three people standing there to talk to him. Now
that's
you just
how he
like,
does it though.
Now you've just transformed into full time jerk when the microphone's live. Come on, man. It's one thing to be snarky, and I like snarky guys and snarky coaches more than any person perhaps on this planet. But you know, there's the line that he leapt past.
Do you know how many of my friends have texted me in the past 3 days saying, are you tall enough to talk about college basketball on your show? You know how many people have said that to me?
Well, and then you told the story yesterday of Thabeet putting you in your spot.
Oh, yeah, Hashim Thabeet, man. Dude, saying, what are you, 4'11"? Okay, we'll see.
Here, I'll make you feel better.
Yeah.
All right, so you're
not 4'11". You're taller than 4'11".
No, I am. But Super Bowl event, right? I'm there all week. I'm going, doing interviews. I get introduced to a bunch of guys at an event. And then we're at the Madden party, and it's late. Everybody's just, by this point, everybody's a little liquored up. And then someone hits a microphone and says, hey, someone still here, friend of y'all, he'd like to come out and perform. Ladies and gentlemen, Snoop Dogg. And he comes out, and Bishop Magic Don Juan comes out like it's straight out of old school. And a couple of the guys, NFL players, yell, hey, you want to sit on my shoulder so you can see?
Oh, wow.
We've been best friends ever since. No, in all seriousness, you don't forget introductions like that. Between that and, you know, telling me that the good Lord did me wrong in not so favorable words, certainly not FCC compliant. Thank you, Raylan.
No,
those were my welcome to meeting NFL players outside of a normal work environment kind of situations, and I love them all. I felt accepted.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. You can tell that story after all these years. You want to see, you want to get on my shoulders?
You want to get on my shoulders, little man? Come on. He may or may not have gone to your school.
Whoo. Okay. Well, all right then. Wow. Hey, Cusio.